Welcome back to the Lawn Hustle Podcast, the lawn care podcast that helps build better leaders and better businesses. Today we have Kevin Scott, the wealthy landscaper, with us, and I appreciate you joining the Lawn Hustle. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Andy. It's great to be here.
Yes, sir. Tell our listeners your background, your story, what got you into landscaping, and what got you to where you are today.
Okay. I'll give you the Cole's Notes version, but left high school in grade 11, went to work for an irrigation company for a couple of years, doing some golf irrigation as well as residential. From there, I did a lot of golf construction work. And then I went back to school, got a horticulture degree when I was like 24, came out of that and joined a golf construction company. We were building golf courses all around Ontario during the golf boom from like 97 to 07, probably built 8 or 9 golf courses over that period of time with a lot of renovations and really great projects, you know, working with great architects, amazing earth shapers. We were moving a lot of earth. We had tons of scrapers and rock trucks running around. Obviously all the drainage and irrigation, seeding, planting, sodding. And then we'd have the clubhouse landscapes as well. But I was always out of town. There was 2 or 3 projects over a 10-year period that I was able to stay at home and work from home. But often I would be gone kind of Monday to Wednesday, come home Wednesday night, back Friday. And that was fine in the beginning, but then, you know, had a couple of young girls. It was getting tougher to be away. And my family was all from Muskoka, which is the area that we have our Muskoka Landscapers Company. We were living in Richmond Hill at the time that I was in the golf construction, but I always knew I wanted to do something on my own. We knew we wanted to get back to Muskoka. My wife's parents had retired in Muskoka. So we started Muskoka Landscapers. That was 18 years ago. It was kind of good timing because the golf boom sort of ended in 08. Certainly for new construction, it's picked up again since COVID. But that was kind of the start of Muskoka Landscapers. And, you know, we started like every other business. We had 3 or 4 people the first year. We were doing whatever we could get our hands on. We focused mainly on construction type work, not as much maintenance at the beginning. And we grew that very quickly. We grew to 15 or 20 people within 3 or 4 years. We started doing maintenance. We built the maintenance up to a substantial annual amount. We ended up converting it into its own business because now the construction side was really growing. We got to, you know, $8, $9, $10 million in revenue fairly quickly. And maintenance at the time, we just weren't really set up properly for it. You know, we didn't have the right, I shouldn't say we didn't have the right people. We had some of the right people. We didn't have the right systems. We didn't have the right technology. There was tons of competition at the time. But anyway, we built that into a separate business and then I sold it. This year, we're getting back into the maintenance business. And I've had a lot of people ask me why, but it's because of the knowledge we have now. We know that we can perform at a high level. We have the systems to do it. We have the people to do it. We have the customers to do it. So we're really excited about diving back into that. And on the design build side, we have about 38 people, fairly seasonal in Canada where we are. You know, we have 3 months from January to March where we don't do a lot of outdoor work other than excavation, some blasting work, maybe a little bit of island work off the ice if we need to. We've got a great thing going, right? We've got a really good team. We've got a great management system. And Wealthy Landscaper started a year and a half ago now. Started out as something I always wanted to do. One, you know, the industry's been good to me. I wanted to do something for the industry. And we've worked really closely with Leanscaper. That's a new company for anybody who hasn't heard about it. I'm sure you see them everywhere. Their mission and vision is very similar to mine. I really enjoy the people there. I've known Mark for years. And that's kind of been the transition into the Wealthy Landscaper. It's more, you know, coaching some clients, trying to work with other people in the industry, still working on being a better leader myself. And love the grind, love the industry. That's how I got here.
Well, scalability is one of the biggest pain points for a business in the green industry, because people get stuck in a mindset that they're just cutting grass. If we can change that mindset from thinking I just cut grass to where we start thinking of ourselves as someone who runs a legitimate business. So we want to talk a little bit about scalability. So let me ask you, what does a scalable business look like to you?
It's one that's always building leaders. You know, in order to lead, you need to replace yourself or take away some of your workload so that you can focus on sales and management systems and building SOPs and becoming a better leader. Because I think in our industry, a lot of people often come from the field. So we're very good at the work. We understand it. We know how to do it. But often we don't have a business background. So I think a lot of people struggle in the industry and all at different levels, because I think, you know, the ones and threes are always the toughest part. 1 million is tough to hit, 3 million is tough to break. But once you can get beyond that, you know, often those systems will get you to 10. So I think it's scalability is tough, but it's very predictable if you do the right things.
Well, is there a difference between growth and scalability?
Yeah, I think a little bit of it. You know, a company can always have growth or plan for growth. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're scaling. You know, you can have growth by conserving waste. You know, I think a lot of companies overlook waste. We've been working on it for 3 or 4 years now, and I can say for sure it has improved our net by 5 or 6%. But it's work, and it, you know, the sooner people start looking at waste as cash, and whether that's inefficiency in routes, the wrong equipment, the wrong people, the wrong systems, there's 50 or 60 things that can add up to be waste. Breaks are too long, coffee's too long in the morning. You know, there's all these things that add up to a dollar amount at the end of the year. And I think when people really start focusing on those, they can grow their business without having to add people, just by being more efficient. So I think that's one of those things too. Like, I think when companies get to a million, they should really take a bit of time to focus on waste, you know, maybe even prior to that. You know, but it's an ongoing thing that needs to be reviewed every year and talked about at every huddle. And so, yeah, I think there's a difference. Scalability, you're more planning to grow, you know, and you're going to do that through adding people, adding customers, whether it's construction or maintenance. But yeah, that'd be my two cents on the difference.
Well, you can be busy and not be profitable.
Been there too.
And I think a lot of businesses are at that point in the green industry because we know how to stripe out a yard. We know how to edge a driveway and a sidewalk, to trim the hedges, to install mulch or river rock. We know how to do the work. But I think sometimes we get stuck in that thinking that I'm just cutting grass. You know, I'm not really doing anything more. But we got to change the way we think. You know, I believe, and I believe you will probably agree, you are what you think you are.
Yes.
If you think you're a loser, you've already lost. But if you think you're a winner, you think you can overcome. And overcoming cancer was the hardest thing I ever overcame in my life.
I'm sure.
And I was up and down, depressed, sad, discouraged, wanted to quit, wanted to give up. But there was something inside me said, you were not born to be a quitter. And I just made up my mind, every time I get knocked down, I'm going to get back up. I'm going to keep fighting. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you have seen working with other landscape businesses. What are some of the mistakes you have seen them make when they're trying to scale, trying to take their business to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, there's many, depending on what level they're at. They have different issues usually. First off, though, I mean, the story is incredible. The story is incredible. And I think to your point about belief, you know, a lot of people have limiting beliefs in themselves for whatever reason, whether it's how they grew up or it's the work they do now. But I'd say in our industry, it has improved dramatically in the past 5-6 years. Like, you're seeing businesses succeed and be very profitable, small companies, big companies, mid-sized companies, with a real focus on being a business. And now with private equity looking at everything, it's all the more reason to be making sure you're running your business well. But the problems I would see, the main problem is implementation. I talk about this a lot. Like, a lot of the information on how to scale a business, how to grow a business, how to advertise properly, like, you can find the information. You can build the systems. You can, like, it's all out there to get, especially with AI. But a lot of people just can't implement. And sometimes they can't because they just don't believe they can. You know, a lot of people give up before they really try. And it's an unfortunate thing. I understand why it happens, but I think as an industry, all of
craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine, Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Kachava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code SHAKE. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code SHAKE.
Things that are happening with the improving, I think it's really a great opportunity for people who do feel like they're struggling with that implementation. I mean, there's all kinds of coaches. There's all kinds of resources. You can find the information online. It's about the implementation and not biting off too much. Like, I know so many businesses that it happens a lot after events. You know, you leave, you're excited. There's 25 or 50 things on your mind that you're like, we got to do all these things. You come back, you bombard your team, they feel overwhelmed, they think you're crazy. Whereas if you were to just settle back a little bit, pick 2 or 3 things that you know are going to really move the needle and that maybe there's a bit of low-hanging fruit in your business to fix, to really work towards 2 or 3 things at a time, get them implemented well, have the team buy in, even if you only have 2 or 3 people. You know, like even when you're a smaller company, I mean, I think implementing things is no different than when you have 100 people. They got to believe it. They got to see why it's better for them, you know, create that clarity. Because ultimately, everybody wants that. Everybody wants to be clear on, you know, if I do this, this is how long it should take. This is why. This is what happens if I do it. You know, when people know all those things, it's a lot easier for them to buy in. And the worst thing you can do is release new things and then in a month pull back on them, because now you're creating people that seen it didn't work. Next time you try and do it, they're less confident in you. So anyway, I could go on about implementation for hours, but I think it is truly the hardest part of our business. And some of it's because our owners can't buy into it and don't want to put the effort into it because sometimes they feel like the value isn't there. And also because it's hard. It's hard to do.
Well, do you feel like there is a revenue level that one needs to get to before they try to scale a business? And what should they focus on to get to that revenue level?
Right. Again, lots of different things. But you know, if you're a business that's say under 500,000, it's still a good time to start building out systems like your SOPs, like how the morning huddle works, how the equipment's maintained, safety, you know, routes, how you park, how you unload the trailer, and you know, like there's hundreds of things that can be built into systems. The biggest thing, though, I think, is building out your workflow. So what happens from like initial phone call to warranty work or to the end of the first year of service, depending on, you know, irrigation companies, maintenance, construction, whatever you're doing. But I think really building out that workflow with all the things that happen, like when the callback is, what do they get when you call back? Do you have a welcome package? Who does the estimating? Who are they responsible to? Because when you build out that workflow, you'll see that there's, like, I know our workflow at Muskoka Landscapers has 120 steps. And years ago, there was me and another person on it, you know, because you're doing a little bit of everything, especially when you're a smaller company. But as your company grows, it's so much easier then to take people's names and add them to take things off the list and create some accountability for them and take it off your plate. But I think under 500,000, it's still good. And again, build out two at a time, you know, get the team to use them, walk them through it, get them to help you build it. Like that's one of the biggest things with implementing. If you have your team help you, build out an SOP for them, they generally have much better buy-in. And then as you get bigger, I think it just becomes different things. You know, once you crack the $1 million mark, you need different people. Right? You may need an ops person. You may need a sales manager. You may need a full-time person in accounting, you know, depending on how you're set up. So I think as it progresses, and then once you hit the 3 million mark, you kind of need all the people at some capacity that you need to run a $10 million business. They just might not be doing it all the time. You know, often you grow people where they're still working in the field a little bit, but also have another role. And the thing I think to watch for with that, especially at the smaller scales, is don't move position, you know, don't move people that you have into positions because they've been with you for a while if they're not skilled to do that position. I think a lot of us make that mistake. We put people into roles because they've been with us for a long time where they're not really the right fit person, but we're trying to create more reason for them to stay, which I've had success with as well. But I've also had problems with it. So I think, but it's a common mistake in the industry. And then you find out as you scale, that person really doesn't have the skills to do what you need them to do. And then, you know, you're in a bit of a pickle.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I was going to ask you, when a business gets to the place where they realize they can't do it all by themselves and they need to hire someone, what is the best position to hire first? Office help, a manager, more field technicians. What do you think we should hire first when we get to that point where we're ready to scale?
I think it's two things. One is hire somebody that's better at you than your weakest point. Like whatever you're weak at, hire somebody to do that, that's good at it. I think that's a big key. The other thing is hire somebody that can really take things off your plate. You know, often we get worried, you know, or we make the mistake, and I've made this mistake many times too. You hire somebody to do a role, they're not really doing the role, so you're still getting dragged back in. You know, so you got to make sure you hire well too, pay what they're worth. And often we get into this like spot where we think, well, if I just had another mower or I just had another excavator, like people can get their head around that. You know, they have a hard time going, I got to pay that guy 70 grand a year or 100 grand a year or whatever the number is for things I'm already doing, but not realizing that person may not do it the same way as you do. They're likely going to do it better. And like the increase in your enterprise value by having them is dramatic because now you're able to focus on all these other things that you now have time for. Like you start getting people that come in and take 30 or 35 of your hours off of what you were doing. man, you could really move the needle, right? And I think that would be the other comment, is like, who can move the needle the most first? Whether that's an accountant, maybe a CFO, ops person, could be a salesperson. You know, I think whoever can move the needle the most, and I would say wherever you think you're weakest, that's the person you need first. Because for certain companies, it's different, right? If you're somebody who really loves the sales and accounting portion and you're good at it, you may want to hire an ops manager. You know, you may want to hire somebody that to do something that you not necessarily don't like to do, but don't feel you're really passionate or good at, and fill that gap with somebody who's strong.
And as the business owner, I need to determine what are the things that only I can do.
Right.
And what are the things that I can delegate? And that could determine what kind of hire you hire to begin with when you go to scale your business. And when you begin to build that team, you start buying back your time. And it frees you to do what only you can do and to work on your business and not in your business, and to be able to go to those birthday parties. When I first started, I had no help.
Right.
I was missing my kids' birthday parties. I was missing family cookouts, reunions. And I made up my mind one day when my wife said, "Everyone asked about you, where you were." And I made up my mind, I'm tired of building and working so hard to build this business that I'm failing to build a life. And my wife and I have been married now for 36 years. And we have two successful grown children that are great, productive citizens in our community. But I had to realize there's some things that only I can do, and there's a whole lot of things I can delegate. And at this point, I need to hire someone. And I think if people will start thinking about building a life instead of just building a business, it can direct them in the direction that they should go for their business. So when you go to set up your business, what would be the first system that you would recommend to implement in order to promote growth?
I would probably start with SOPs, because SOPs really give a clear description of how everything gets done within the business. So as you hire people, sometimes you need to modify the SOPs based on their skill set or they're weak in an area. You might have to make an adjustment. But I think building out those systems is really the key. And then that workflow is the biggest one, because if you build out, and it takes time, you need a half a day probably to really sit back and think about like all the little things and handoffs that happen from an initial call to the site meeting, who sets that up, how quickly do they get an estimate back, is the estimate presented? There is a contract, there's a deposit, there's a lot of things that happen in that workflow. And the sooner you build that and follow it, it makes it so much easier to add people into it. And that workflow is going to change as you grow as well. There's going to be new people, there's going to be new systems that you need to add. It might be a sales to ops handoff. You know, there's lots of different things that'll change. But to your point too about time, yeah, like you want to be careful. You're not, it's a cliche, I guess, but, you know, don't be so focused on building a home that nobody wants to live in.
True.
You know, yes, sir. It's a mistake we all make. I did the same thing. I'm making up for it now with my girls, but the first 7-8 years, and keep in mind at that time, my wife worked in the business for the first 5 or 6 years as well. So there was a lot of like after dinner work and gone for the weekends.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Not for the weekends, but on the weekend for estimating or meeting clients. And, you know, I missed a lot of soccer games and a lot of swim practices. And again, I'm making up for it now with travel with them, which is awesome. But yeah, it's an easy trap to fall in. And I would also say, just kind of in the same light, that probably the hardest part as a young business is the flip from being somebody, the owner is in the field, to not being in the field. That's probably the biggest hurdle for most people, because they know they're the most productive. They know they're the one that keeps the pace the best. So transitioning from somebody else doing that role and you moving into more of a management or sales or accounting role is difficult. It's probably the hardest leap, I would say. When you start getting into the, you know, again, depending on your business, but if you're over $1 million in maintenance, for instance, once you're over that, you know, as you grow, okay, when I hit this number, I need this person. When I hit this number, I hit this person. And it's the same with construction. Like once you get to the $3 million mark, you're kind of capped out as a owner operator, you know, like you need to add people. So I think the clues are a little more obvious as you grow, but that jump. And I mean, when you look at how many businesses are in North America and the percentage of them that do less than $500,000 a year, that is like 90% of our industry, you know, 85-90%. And again, I think that's because that transition is so hard to leave the field or leave the team and really be relying on somebody else to manage the work. So as a young business, that's what you want. You want to work on replacing yourself. You want to work on replacing yourself all the way through, you know? So I think that's one of the tougher hurdles for most.
I was reading a book by Dr. John Maxwell. Mm. And in this book on leadership, he said, you should be training your replacement right now. If you want to be an effective leader, start training your replacement. And that has always stuck to me since I read that. It's been years ago.
Right.
And I think I started investing in my employees. You know, we have boot day. I'll take them all out and buy them a new pair of boots.
Perfect.
We fist bump every morning and have contact. Let them know, you know, I care about you. I'm concerned about you. And I have found that when you do those things and you invest in your employees, they in return are committed and sold out to help you bring your vision to fruition and bring your goals to reality. When you invest in them, they buy into you.
Definitely.
And they start feeling like, you know, I work for professional lawn maintenance, or I work for Kevin Scott. I work for a legitimate business, and they start giving you 100% when you invest in them. Let's take just a short break and let's hear a word from my show sponsor.
Tired of chasing payments and losing track of jobs? Eartha Pro back office software makes it simple for solo guys and small lawn care and landscaping crews. Schedule, invoice, and organize all in the same place. We also have a mobile app and integrate into QuickBooks. Sign up at earthapro.com with promo code thelawnhustle11 for a $50 Amazon gift card, 10% off, and personalized onboarding. Eartha Pro, you run the outside work, we run the office.
If you are shopping for a CRM, check out Eartha Pro at earthapro.com and sign up with the Lawn Hustle 11 for a $50 Amazon card, a 10% discount, and specialized onboarding. We've been talking about scaling and growing a business, and I feel like I have one of the authoritarian voices on this subject on my show today. And I want to ask you, should owners focus on profit or growth first?
I mean, they kind of go hand in hand, because you need the funds, right? You need the funds to grow, or you need the capital to grow, one or the other. And what we were talking about before the break there too, with the team, I think that is probably the most dramatic change we've had in our business. It was probably 6 or 7 years ago where we were so, I think I was so, I wasn't the leader I am today, 7 or 8 years ago. And I was a bit naive, very naive, but we used to be profit customers team. Now it's team customers profit. And when we flipped that and really started making our focus on our team and trying to drive up wages and pension plan and benefit packages. And I mean, we have so much less turnover, like very little, like this year we have everybody back from last year and we're adding 3 people. And culture is so big into it. And then that's, just when you were talking about that, Andy, that's a hard thing too, as you grow, right? The culture is much easier when you're a group, especially if you're a group that you're still working with the team. You know, it's a lot easier to have good conversations. You kind of all really know each other well, because at break, you're talking about what you did last night and your kids or your wife or whatever it might be. And often you become really good friends. But as you grow, it gets trickier. But it's more just about real clarity, making sure that everybody's clear on what their role entails, what they do when they improve, what they can move to when they improve, how they improve, like what are the steps they need to make. So yeah, I think when you really have that clear vision, it makes a dramatic difference on how everybody feels and how everybody moves. And I don't remember the original question now.
Well, what you said was great.
Okay, perfect. It was growth versus profit.
Yeah.
I think they go together.
In that same book I was telling you about by Dr. Maxwell, he made another, I think it's a profound statement. If you think you're a leader and no one's following you, you're just taking a walk. So I want to be a leader in our industry where I develop people that follow me. Because I have a vision, because I have set my goals. They're smart goals, they're reachable goals, they're trackable goals. And with all of that being said, what KPI or what key performance indicator should a business try to develop first in order to help them scale? Would it be, do I need to keep a laser focus on my revenue growth, my revenue per client, my profit margin? And I'll stop right there. And I am just amazed at how many people don't know what their profit margin is. They know their revenue and they'll brag about their revenue. Well, I done $2 million last year. How much profit did you make? That's the key to whether you're successful or whether you're failing, right? Even though you brought in $2 million. Or customer or client retention rate. Are you maintaining your customers or are you having to get new customers every season just to survive? So what would you think would be a key performance indicator that people need to really start focusing on?
Yeah, I'll give you 2. And the first one isn't really a key performance indicator, but it's standards. You got to set the standards for the people to follow the systems, right? You want people to do what you would do if you were there. So I think that's something that a lot of people don't focus enough energy on. They're just setting standards are just as important as SOPs. But when it comes to finance, we really focus hard on our labor variance. So we're looking at estimated versus actual weekly. And that's we know we want to hit a certain revenue per hour, and that's how we're profitable. And when we dip down, we need to revisit it. When we're going up, we know things are going well. And you want to really take a lot of that information and be able to assess it to see like, okay, well, why are we up so high right now? Like, is it the type of job? Is it the area we're working? Is it the crew that's on that job? So revenue per hour, I think, is the biggest indicator, because often your budget is set on that. Like if you look at your budget versus hours you predict to work, that's going to be your revenue per hour, should be your revenue per hour, assuming you work all those hours. Now it's a question of how profitable are those hours. So I think there's a lot of great systems to do that. We use Element at Muskoka Landscapers. So the guys can see anytime they want, they can look and go, I've used 200 of 1,000 hours to do this patio or whatever the number might be. And they get a pretty good sense of where they're at. And then we're checking it weekly as well. But I think that's probably the, if you're only going to do one, that's the one I would do is labor variance.
What marketing strategy do you use?
We're in a different area. We're in a lakefront cottage residential area with a lot of high net worth owners. So we only do like 19 to 20 projects a year. But they're, you know, our average is probably about 600,000. So they're big projects. So it's a little bit unique, and we have a lot of referrals. We've built relationships over the years with builders and architects and landscape architects, and that's really where most of our funnel comes from, and through design as well. But marketing, you know, depending on what you're doing, maintenance I always find is a little bit tough. But again, it depends on the type of maintenance you're doing. You know, if I was a commercial maintenance person, I'd be trying to make as many relationships as I could with property managers that look after commercial sites, school boards, any big industrial areas, people with a lot of grass. But as far as marketing goes, I think having a really great website that's simple but really shows what your right fit work is important. You know, your branding is obviously really important. Your welcome package, like the sending something to the customer as soon as you get a new call that shows what you do. And if you're in construction, like a little program checklist, like what are you looking for? Oh, I want a pool and a cabana and whatever it might be. So you're kind of already vetting them a little bit as well. You kind of know what they're looking for. But this speed, the speed of that going out and setting up that initial call is very important. Just like estimating the turnaround time, like your odds of getting a job because you're the first estimate in, it's like 30 or 40% higher than if you're the last person in, even if you're cheaper. It's not always about the cheapest price. But then, I mean, I don't do a lot of Google and Meta ads, but I work with people that do. I know that I've got one client that spends about $6,000 a month on Google ads, and he easily gets more work than that. It brings the right leads. It is expensive. I've got another person that spends $12,000 a month. So those types of systems definitely work. But I think at the core of it, it's who do people think you are? You know, what's the message that you're giving people? Because that's really what they believe. I'm a massive believer in referral work. I think if you build out a really good customer journey, you know, especially when you talk about systems, like stepping back and looking at it from how the customer is going to see your company through a project or through a maintenance season, and what you want them to feel like when you're done. If you can do that, they're going to rave about you all the time. And if it's an ongoing, like annual reoccurring thing for you, it's gravy. Like it's gravy to make sure those relationships stay strong. Cause that is the easiest. When you get a referral, it's yours to lose. It's not going to matter what your price is. If they're a friend, and I did a presentation not too long ago that I used this study. Most couples have 4 to 7 other couple friends that they're close with and they hang out with. And they're in their backyards together and they're using their outdoor kitchen or sitting by the pool with the kids or whatever it is. But when you build like these super happy customers, they tell everybody that comes to their house who it is, what they've done, how they did it, how great they were to work with. And then even if you do it on the five model, which was what the presentation was about, they tell five people. The study showed that it goes out about 4 rounds. It works out to 1,250 people. From one really happy customer, they're going to spread the word. It works the other way too, which is also important to remember, depending on logistically where you are. Word travels fast and bad news usually travels faster. So, but yeah, outside of that, I think it's just really about showing people who you are.
That word of mouth is sometimes the best form of advertisement.
It's incredible.
You know, and I wore, or I wear shirts and hats and has my logo all over it and everything. My truck's logoed. And I was in the post office waiting to get some stamps. Mm-hmm. And a little lady tapped me on the shoulder. When I turned around, it was a little elderly lady. She said, "Do you mow anybody's yard?" I said, "As long as they pay me." And I was just making a joke with her. She said, "Well, I want you to give me an estimate." I said, "Sure." So when I left the post office, I met her at her house, gave her the quote. She accepted, and I went the next week to start mowing her yard. 2 weeks later, the neighbor that lives next door walked over and said, "Would you give me an estimate?" She said, "She has been talking to me about you. Says you do a great job, and you're dependable, you're trustworthy, and you show up." I gave her the estimate. I got her job. The next week, the man across the street walked over. Same story. Asked for an estimate. I gave him an estimate. Got his job. Because I showed up and I'd done the job the best that I could, that one stop ended up being three stops on the same street. And that tightened up my route density for that day's schedule. Less windshield time, because I'm not a trucker. I don't get paid to look out a window. I get paid to cut grass. And when I cut that grass, I can make that cash. So,
love it.
You know, and I got one in Muncie. Same story. I started mowing my aunt's yard. Now I have seven in a row on that street. So I pull up about halfway between the seven, drop the gate one time, mow all seven in about an hour and 25 minutes, and make almost $500.
Perfect.
So one stop.
You don't need too many of those.
No. And then I go around and mow an eye doctor, a hearing aid doctor. The eye doctor's in here in Newcastle. I mow a hearing aid office and an insurance office. Takes me about 10 minutes to mow both of them because they're on a busy street. The yards aren't very big. Right. But because I have a minimum, I'm not dropping my gate for less than 65. Mm-hmm. I can make $130 in 10 minutes.
Perfect.
So, but it's that word of mouth. I would have never got all of those jobs if someone wasn't happy with the job that I got.
Right.
And they start talking. And you're exactly right. Sometimes that word of mouth is the best form of advertisement.
Often when you get an area like that too, you can actually do it for less.
Yes.
You know, when you start adding that many 7-10 people on the same street, you know, you can make it more affordable for them a little bit as well and just lock in, especially if you're doing quality work. People love it.
Well, because my gas in the truck has decreased. I mean, I'm still using the same amount of gas to mow all seven of them, but I'm not traveling back and forth. I'm not paying helpers to ride in the truck. I'm not, you know, running from here and there trying to make the same amount of money. I'm right there, one stop, mow 7 yards, almost $500 into the business. And we leave very happy because we made a lot of profit on those 7 jobs.
I'm sure.
So, let me ask you this. What is one system that our listeners should implement right now if they want to grow and scale? Is it a CRM? Is it route density? Is it some kind of client retention program that they have? What would be some good advice for our listeners that they can put into action right now to help them grow?
I think there's a lot of things. I would say number one, something that tells you what your revenue per hour is. A system, a software, something that you can look at it whenever you want and see, yes, we're doing it on time or for less time, or we're running over on everything. That gives you all the information you need to make better decisions and know if you need to adjust your rates or if you've got a slack crew or whatever. I think that's probably the biggest ones. A company that has scale or has, maybe they have three or four crews running around or they're doing construction. We use an email tool that's just, it's free. It's called the five. It used to be called the 4@3. It was something Element came out with years ago, and we've kind of adopted it into the 5@3. But it asks every crew at 3 o'clock, five questions. What did you get done today? What are you doing tomorrow? What's slowing you down? What do you need from me, meaning the management? We put sub trades on ours because we deal with a lot of sub trades. So it's more just to get them thinking about what they're doing, what they need from us. Is anything slowing them down? But that tool, if you have multiple crews, gives you a great sense of where everybody's at all the time. And they also put four or five pictures in there. I think there's lots of little tools that make improvements really quickly. You just got to use them. And there's so many great apps and software out there too that can tell you everything you want to know.
Well, I want to be mindful of your time. I know you're busy. I appreciate you coming on the show. We're right at our 45-minute time frame. So let me try to wrap this up with this. Finish this sentence. If I want to scale, I must
get out of my own way.
Very good.
Many, many people are just like the owner's the bottleneck, you know, especially as companies do start to scale because I went through this for years too. You were the person doing everything when you started. Then you had somebody helping you a little bit. And then you had somebody else help. Now you had a couple extra crew. Like, so as that grows, you tend to want to micromanage, or you're hearing conversations. I still have to stop myself from doing it. And I have great managers. But often I'll be hearing a conversation that's happening in the office and I'll still be putting my 2 cents in and slowing down that process. And they were likely going to come up with the same solution. I was just trying to speed it up. That would be how I would end that, is get out of your own way.
That is so good. Well, Kevin, I really do appreciate you taking time out of your day to share with our listeners on some profitable, tangible information to help them scale and grow. I wish I had something like this when I first started my business.
Yeah.
Something that could have guided me and maybe helped me not make as many mistakes as I did, because I made my fair share.
Sure.
But I really appreciate you. I thank you. And I wish you nothing but success. And until we talk again, keep growing, keep making a profit, and keep hustling. Thank you for joining the Lon Hustle.
Thank you, Andy. It was great to meet you, and look forward to doing it again one day.
Well, I'll tell you, like Tony Rudolph told me, when he meets someone, they're friends for life. So you're stuck with me now.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, and have a great week.
You as well. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.